Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast number 96. I'm your host, not Alex, also known as Ben. With me from sunny Sweden for the first time in weeks is our pal Colin. Say hello, Colin.
Hello, Colin.
Yes, perfect. So we're going to have quite a conversation on this week's podcast. We've, you know, spent last week's podcast, Alex and I, talking about wrapping up the Ducks series and sort of imagining what the Vegas series would look like. But Colin didn't get to be part of those discussions. So I feel like this is a good opportunity, Colin, to sort of recap a little bit about the Ducks by talking about your experience with the Ducks series. And first of all, as part of that, you were visiting the U.S. during the Ducks series after your exile was overturned, and you got to go to a playoff game. You got to go to game 3 at the Tank. What would you like to tell us about what that experience was like for you, who have had to kind of mostly watch hockey from afar for the last several years?
Well, like most Sharks games, I was sitting next to an obnoxious jerk.
It's true.
Yeah, Ben, you forget that there were Sharks before you were a fan, and I went to many games during that time.
What?
That actually makes it all the worse, you know, always catching games remotely and time delayed. Playoff hockey, it's amazing. It's awesome. And, you know, not taking any credit, but that was the blowout game for the Sharks, so...
Yeah, not only that, you know, Colin, you visited the U.S. a couple years before for a month or so, and you and I went to a game. I'm the obnoxious jerk Colin is referring to, in case that wasn't clear. And that game also was a blowout. That was a 7-0 win for the Sharks over Toronto, which happened to be sort of the turning point for our Stanley Cup final run team that year. I really enjoyed getting to go to that game. I also really enjoyed getting to go to that game with a member of our podcast, because we don't often end up in the same place at the same time. Colin is far less obnoxious heckling the other team than I am. It's true. But honestly, I feel disappointed that the person next to me didn't refer to Ryan Miller as a sack of fertilizer, given shape and form by a magic spell. So
there we go. Ryan Miller, the magic bag of shit. That was one of your better heckles of the night. And again, I don't know where I base this in, but I enjoyed Miller before he came to the West Coast.
For sure.
Yeah. I thought he was a great goalie to watch, and you know, I'm sad that he has to play for such, you know, unfortunate teams.
Yeah, it's too bad that the Ducks have basically become the place where Vancouver players go to die.
Well, I mean, I've got no problem with that. I'm okay with Anaheim being a joke. They just need to be a joke that doesn't try to injure people.
Right.
And the series, I like the series overall because you know, this was the main talking point that we were discussing at the game and while I was in California. Watching the Sharks play, it was watching a team who knew they were better deal with something they had to get through before, you know, moving on with the season. They didn't treat it like this rivalry where they needed to go the extra yard to, you know, take an extra shot or, you know, get a little extra scuffle going or, you know, be that extra little bit of chippy. They really played it like the, you know, the professionals playing the AAA team who was, you know, getting to play in the big boy arena for a series. And it's good. It shows a focus and sort of a professionalism towards a series that you're supposed to win that, you know, you need to have, because now they're in a series where they have to prove they can win. And, you know, it's good they didn't. Well, except for Kane, it's good that the team didn't really carry a lot of frustration and baggage from, you know, some trumped up first round series that they didn't need.
What's interesting about the way you put that, Colin, is I totally, you know, the way you frame that the Sharks played that first round against the Ducks like they knew they were the better team, even though I would say the media narrative would not have agreed with that. I think the media narrative is that Anaheim was coming in hot and the Sharks were injured and not prepared for what Anaheim was going to bring. And the reality was that the Sharks did largely outplay Anaheim from start to finish, maybe except game four, where Anaheim probably deserved a win. And didn't, right? That happens sometimes.
Well, I mean, yeah, Anaheim didn't get bounces, and there was some shenanigans, but the main critique I have on the Sharks in game four is it was a team that was already looking to the second round. You know, they had already turned their head from the first round series, and, you know, maybe they backed off a little bit because they knew it was won. When I was watching that game, the game puck drops, and I'm just like, all right, time to watch the series end and then start on with Vegas. And while it wasn't the game I wanted to watch, it was sort of what I expected. It was a team, you know, cleaning the last few dishes, putting everything away, and getting ready for the real party to start.
Right. I mean, do you really think it was that the Sharks were looking ahead, or do you give any credit to Anaheim for playing their best game, knowing that if they didn't win, they go home? Which is was my takeaway. I don't think the Sharks played their best game, but I also do think that the Ducks did.
But they still lost. So if Anaheim playing at their best still suck, I mean, to me, it's the Sharks left the door open. Like they just turned away from something that wasn't quite finished and almost got bitten for it.
Yes. Yeah.
But the fact that the Ducks playing at their best still couldn't take that bite. I mean, yeah.
Well, it was a series we had to win. I mean, as you said, though, get the bounces and they go back to Anaheim, you know, with a chance to win another game and come back here for another game, right? I mean, the upside is that the Sharks got the bounces in that game and they did put the Ducks away. And great, right? That meant that both Vegas and the Sharks had multiple days off, time to rest up, time to prepare for each other, etc.
Sure, but I mean, I think we would be in a totally different headspace if somehow this series had gone to seven.
Agree.
Because we'd be asking ourselves, how the hell did this go to seven?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was the Sharks series to lose. I mean, and we all know that there's already been a series where the Sharks were up 3-0.
Yeah, okay.
Put it away.
See, the thing is, like, in that commentary, you can't even watch that from your history with a cup. You need at least two. You need two without any calamities between the cups. But I just genuinely think it was the team that knew they were going to win. It was theirs to win.
Yeah.
You know, following through on the script. And it's kind of boring to talk about because this is sort of what happens when everything goes the way it's supposed to.
Right. Well, it's only the second time in the Sharks' history they've swept a series, even. So that was great. It did, again, set the Sharks up with some time to heal because we know there are guys on this team who are carrying injuries in from the regular season and injuries in from the first round. Burns is dinged up. Kane was dinged up. Donskoy probably dinged up. Guys at this time of year, they're just carrying injuries, and you never really know who's got, you know, the debilitating back injury, the groin pull, what have you, until a team is out of the playoffs, right?
So I'll set up our segue here.
Sure.
The thing that the sweep series and the way the nature of our winning the series kind of hurt us going into the second round is it didn't force the Bower to look deeper in his roster for what sort of things he has in the cupboard, namely with the defensive side. Like Martin looked like he had a good series.
More or less, yeah. I mean,
did he have a good series against a bad team that he knows really well?
Right.
Or did he have a genuinely good series? And, you know, who on our forward core, you know, was supposed to answer a question of, like, size or a little bit more grit? Or maybe just, you know, Anaheim somehow pulling the ice a bit wider like they were trying to do in the first two games.
I'll go even further. I think the first round series and the way the Sharks dominated the Ducks with speed.
Yeah.
Also led to maybe some incorrect conclusions as to how the Sharks would need to deal with the Golden Knights.
Yes.
And so I think, but I know where you're headed with that thought about the defense core. We know that Peter DeBoer is a superstitious coach who does not change things when the team is winning. He doesn't look at the process. He looks at the results.
Well, here's a simplified way to think of it, like a simplified metaphor for people is if the driving is smooth, he never thinks to push the gas. And that's something he needs to do.
Right.
He needs to be like, we're winning. Can we be winning more?
Right. Can we have a more optimal lineup than we currently have that is winning?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the process, right? The process is, we're winning, but are we winning because we are, optimal up and down the lineup, or are we winning just because we happen to be a skosh better than the Anaheim Ducks?
And come on. A skosh. I mean, if a skosh is like four rugby teams smashed into an Irish bar, just going rowdy and the Ducks are like the vegan cafe across the street, then sure.
I mean,
we're a bit more lively.
I agree. I mean, so here's the question that Alex and I talked about a lot last week, and this will give you a chance, I think, to say what you thought the Vegas series would look like, because that sounded like where you were going.
Yep.
It's hard to say in both the Golden Knights and the Sharks first round matchups whether both the Sharks and the Golden Knights are just vastly superior teams as constructed than their opponents, or if their opponents were just plain bad in both cases.
So, I think.
Right. Okay. And Anaheim was hurt. Anaheim also played very poorly. They let their discipline get out of control. They didn't give the Sharks that much of a scare through certainly the first three games of that series. And it scored four goals across that. You go over to the Golden Knights series, the Kings scored three goals and clearly weren't built to play a team as fast and creative and well-coached as Vegas.
Yeah. Well, so my view of Vegas or our team going from Anaheim to the Vegas series. First off, my first expectation was that we are going to benefit from the time off more than Vegas.
Right. Getting healthy. I agree.
Yep. I thought we have the younger team by a little bit. I think we're like 3 years younger average. Or no, we're a lot more since Thornton went on injured.
I think we're slightly younger, though playing a guy like Paul Martin drags our average age up.
So I thought we were going to bounce back harder, which was plainly wrong. And I think that comes into to your point on coaching. Mm. I think that was the factor that I misjudged. I still don't have a good feel for what DeBoer's really good at. And that's not to say, he's jack of everything, good at nothing. It's just what he's doing that's working. I can't quite identify.
Right.
So I was thoroughly surprised by game one. The weird thing about Vegas is my prediction for the series is if I'm not watching Vegas play Sharks in five, if I'm watching Vegas play Sharks in seven, because you forget how good they are. Like they're good in a way where your eye never sinks into everything. It's just everything sort of how it should be. They make the right passes, they don't overextend, they play very sort of textbook good hockey, and then they just are really good at exploiting any mistake their team makes, their opponent makes. And that's the thing, that's where they're scary.
Yep.
When you make a mistake, they are through the crack and trying to score on you almost instantly. And, if you screw up, if you, have a defender who has a penchant for giving it away in the neutral zone, Burns, Martin, they punish you, and they punish you hard. And then they're huge. I mean, well, Ben, do you know the average size of the Knights? Come on.
I did not know that. No.
Well, come on. What are you doing here?
Size doesn't matter. I'm assured by my wife.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. I went there.
Cause, to me, the player that I haven't really watched much, but every time I see him play on Vegas, I'm just like, I want him, get him on our team is, Tuck or Tooch or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure the Wild feel that way too.
Yeah.
They're the morons who gave him up.
Yeah. That guy's a star. And I mean, he's young too, right?
Yeah, they all are. I mean, that's the thing about what.
Wow, he's 21, 6'4".
Yeah, that's what is is the anatomy of this team is let's step back a second, right? We're talking about Vegas being as good as they are, and they remind me a lot the way they play of the the Pens, to be perfectly honest.
So there's a team that I wish Alice were here because he could say check me, but they remind me of the 90s, like mid-90s Detroit team. They're big. Like, they're just, there's right. nobody really that small on the team. I think Carlson's the smallest guy.
Yeah.
And they're fast, and they play a really tight system at a really high pace.
Yeah, totally. What I was going to say is, you know, Vegas is what they are because, first of all, you know, they were given the most beneficial sort of expansion rules that any expansion team ever has for a high financial cost.
Yeah.
Second, they also, given those rules, masterfully sort of put together at least the forward
core. Oh, yeah.
Of this team. And what I mean by that is they got their pick of the fourth or fifth or sixth best player from every team in the league, which has not been true in past expansions. And what they did is they chose young, fast, and probably the smartest guy off of every team is what I would say. Not all of them are that young, right? A lot of the guys they chose are 26, 27, right? But though that's your physical prime. So that's the other benefit they get. The guys they got to choose are guys who weren't necessarily getting opportunities where they were playing, are right in that physical prime where this should be their best year given more responsibility. And hey, it turns out guys like, you know, William Carlson, Jonathan Marchessault, you know, Riley Smith at that age are as good as they should be given now top 6 minutes. Well, and then of course I got James Neal too, who was excellent throughout his career, and a bunch of other guys who, David Perrin, also excellent. A guy, you know, if you'll remember, I wanted the Sharks to sign in the summer of stupidity a couple years ago.
I can't say Bodker's name without wanting to say Badker first.
Right.
I'm trying to put a positive spin on that, Dougie. I'm trying to spin that one positive still, and he's still.
Bodker had a great second half of this season. He's been kind of invisible in the Vegas series, but
hopefully he's coming alive. But
hopefully that changes.
So
what did you think as we approached the Vegas series? What was your prediction for it?
I honestly thought we were going to. Oh, I thought we were going to win in five. After watching the first two games, I still think we win this. Granted, disaster does happen, and I'm saying like Hurdle takes a helmet to the face again, which Vegas fans. By the way, Vegas fans, I hate you, but that's because I'm envious of your organization's first year.
Yeah, I mean, everyone should be.
I really don't want to end up a Vegas fan, but you have to respect talent. It's why I became a Detroit fan. I just respect Bowman. I respect the organization there. They're just epic. Yeah. So Vegas, please do something stupid so I don't have to like it.
So going into the series, so you said you think Sharks in five. I said Sharks in six. I felt like this is a pretty even matchup, but the Sharks would benefit just a little bit from a little bit more star power on defense. And I thought, that would be what tipped the series over into a 4-2 win for the Sharks by game six. And then, of course, and I agreed with you. I thought that the Sharks would benefit from the time off to get healthy. And then it turns out that the Sharks were reading their press clippings about how fast they were and how that was what led them to demolish Anaheim. Yeah. And game one was a game that felt like DeBoer set up to go speed against speed. And all of the mistakes ended up being on the Sharks' side. The defense was terrible. And all of a sudden the Sharks were down 5-0 when I finally had enough and went to finish reading a book.
So quick fun before I ask you a question. The cool thing about, or the cool and cool, people can chuckle at this. But for these last two games, the first game, for game one, I went to sleep thinking Sharks got this, you know, maybe 4-1, 4-2. And then I woke up to watch the last few goals getting scored in a massive blowout. So game two, I go to sleep thinking the Sharks had lost because I stayed up to watch the whole game live, see the overtime goal, say, fuck this, go to sleep, and wake up to see the Sharks have won. So I don't know. I guess I'm just going to expect the Sharks to lose every time I go to bed now.
Well, clearly you need to go to bed before the Sharks play.
Yeah, that's the other thing that needs to happen. But I mostly, so the question I'm going to ask is, was it that DeBoer's coaching speed, and that's why in game one, the Sharks were not leaning into any play and they were getting bounced around so much because they were just, I want to say avoiding the physical play, but it just really feels like they were just taken by surprise and they were completely, like every time a hit came in, it was unexpected almost. And you didn't see a team. It didn't look like a Sharks team that knew they were in a playoff series in game one, where in game two, you see Sharks leaning in. You see Sharks initiating contact. You see them trying to slow the play to open up space and then use speed to exploit space rather than just trying to go fast and getting bounced.
Right. Yeah, so I can't say, obviously, you know, whether DeBoer coached the team to try to match speed versus speed in game one, but that's what it looked like. It looked like the team didn't plan to run DeBoer's typical system of smothering, you know, defense and shot blocking, leading to the speed being the way that you break out of the zone, right, and create opportunities on the other end, which arguably, by the way, is the speed versus speed matchup that beat the Ducks. It wasn't just that the Sharks went into a track meet, right? It's that they played great with the sticks on the ice, blocking or breaking up passes, etc., in the defensive zone, and then just quickly transitioned faster than the Ducks could deal with.
Yeah.
Right. The difference in this series with the Golden Knights is that transition isn't as fast as it is against the Ducks. Right. But regardless, the Sharks made just so many mistakes in game one. There were three times that I feel like at least three times before I turned off the game where somehow a Golden Knight player was entering the zone without a defender anywhere near him. Right.
Yeah.
With a breakout pass and in one on one on Jones, and Jones just wasn't up to it in game one. Not that I felt like Jones was the problem in game one at all. Each puck that got past him had changed direction or was tipped, or he was left alone on an island, right? You're going to miss those occasionally. Except one goal I would say he probably should have had, goal number four. And then when they pulled him after the fifth goal, I was just kind of like, well, whatever. I mean, he wasn't the problem. The problem was a full team meltdown. It was not just a meltdown in terms of performance, but then also a discipline meltdown, which was incredibly disappointing. To see this team become sort of the Ducks when they were down 4 or 5 to nothing.
So I've got a ray of sunshine because the discipline thing, we all, anybody who's watching knows what you're talking about. But we're on the subject of coaching. So you feel you're making the argument that in game one, DeBoer basically said, skate by them, you'll be fine. Game two, he says, oh, wait, these guys are fast as well. Okay, let's go back to that thing that we do to win games and just do that, but try to do it faster.
Whether it's via coaching or just look, teams lose games like the Sharks lost in game one.
Oh, yeah.
Three or four times a season, you just nothing works and you have a total team meltdown. I mean, heck, the Sharks had this happen to them three or four times, you know, this year. And so I think what I liked most of it, though the game was a disgrace, and it was also it may have changed my mind whether the Sharks should attempt to re-sign Evander Kane in the offseason, and I'll talk about that.
But let's stick on the coaching thing, because the coaching thing is going to lead us somewhere you want to talk about.
Here's what I think. Like, I don't know that the players utterly failed to show up because of coaching, or if it's just one of those games where just nothing goes right. It's just what happens. And coach, it happens to every coach and every team, right? So is that coaching or is that just the unexplainable meta of hockey?
Okay.
Right?
So
but two thoughts on that.
Okay.
Re-coaching. First, DeBoer wasn't able to fix it mid-game.
Yeah.
But, you know, do our coaches able to rein in those total meltdowns? You don't. Who knows? Yes. I just don't know. Second, most importantly, was how DeBoer approached it after the game.
Yes.
Where he was calm, said basically the same thing I'm saying, which is this shit happens and you've got a lot to figure out and fix. And we're going to do that. And then what matters is what the team looks like in game the next game.
Right. So let's go to game two where.
Well, hold on.
All right.
Because I still want to talk about discipline.
All right. Let's talk about that subject.
Because we spent the entire Ducks series, both in our private chat and in podcasts, talking about one big difference between the Sharks and the Ducks was the Ducks were a disgrace discipline-wise.
Yep.
So I felt pretty sad, to see, selfish, reckless plays by the Sharks, in response, like sort of petulant Ducks-like behavior, and particularly was incredibly disappointed by Evander Kane.
Yeah, so I agree. I watched through the game to get to that point specifically, and all I can see is a player who didn't leave last series in the last round. Like Getzlaf does this. I think Thornton does this. Hurdle looks like he might start to develop this attitude problem where they leave, like if they get a chip on their shoulder during one series, that chip just sort of stays and they just collect them series to series to series. So by the third round, they're just looking to take somebody out. Even if that player is just sort of has like scuffled them once or like, just given the little tap on those shins or tap their stick, they get progressively more vindictive looking for, looking to sort of get one back or whatever. And they have to leave the series when the series is done. They just have to clean the tab and move on with it. Pavelski, I think, is one of the best at this. Like Paths just is like, okay, that series is done. Shake the guy's hand, mutter something out of my breath, get to the next one. And just, the guy just does the work. And Kane has to just accept that every series is a fresh start. And just, it's better to hold the grit and just back off and hurt him on the scoreboard than try to elevate the chippiness of a playoff game, because that will come. Like you do not need to elevate how chippy a playoff game is going to be, especially in the second round. Because let's face it, the second round is the first real round of the playoffs in this modern NHL. Right. The first round is just to get rid of the teams who somehow snuck in, or to set up a Cinderella in theory, or to set up some comeback underdog situation.
It gives an opportunity for a team that had other challenges during the season to squeak into the playoffs and get strong at the right time. I mean, that was the Sharks 2 years ago on their Stanley Cup final run.
Yep.
So when they'd been missing Coach Hur for a big chunk of that year, and he came back and the team was much stronger and earned that run to the Stanley Cup final. So here's my thinking around Evander Kane. And this is something that as Toronto got bounced from the playoffs just before, this round began.
Oh, real quick. Yeah. Last Toronto game, -2 Marlowe.
One of the questions I saw the Toronto sort of blogosphere talking about was, is it, when you're talking about how to have playoff success, when you're talking about how to have a team that can get to the Stanley Cup final, is it that you have to have as many sort of positive players as possible, like plus players, players who who are just like your prototypical smart, don't make mistakes guys. And it doesn't matter how many sort of knuckleheads you carry, or is it really comes down to how few knuckleheads you have? Because in the playoffs, you just can't afford any or too many mistakes. Right. So that's the debate.
Every team needs a Lucic. Every team needs Lucic to not behave in the way they behave.
Lucic sucks. So maybe you mean Marchand.
Marchand, maybe. Oh, no, because No, you need I mean, you need a Bufflin, you know.
Right.
You need a Bufflin. And
but, right.
You have to, like, if you look at, you've got Perron on the Knights.
I agree with Neil, but I don't think Perron is the same kind of player. So here's what I'm talking about, to be more clear. So the Knucklehead is the guy who's going to cost you penalties when you least need them. The Knucklehead is the guy who's going to make a key mistake that is going to cost you a goal.
Okay. I misunderstood.
Because they don't think the game the way other guys do, or they allow their emotions to get out of control. It's Corey Perry. It's Baldy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How many of those guys can you afford, even if they're great players, can you have and still manage the mistakes? Right.
One.
So we've got that. We've got Burns. Arguably, we have two with Dylan, and he made a key mistake in game two.
True.
Right? Evander Kane, right?
Yeah.
So this is my concern. You know, Kane came to the Sharks with that reputation with a lot of reputational issues. But one of those is that he's a guy, yes, he's got grit. Yes, he plays physically, and that is fantastic. But he doesn't have control over his emotions. He doesn't do these things only at the right time. And we saw that in game one. And what's disturbing about this is you already have Burns, who he doesn't do this in a way where he gets suspended. He doesn't do it in a way where he is a net negative all the time to the Sharks. But, you know, they're at least one goal in game two, almost a crippling goal, was Burns' fault with on the PK, weak chip against the board, stayed in the zone, ends up in the back of the net. I mean, let's just be clear here, and I said this on Twitter. You can title the 2018 San Jose Sharks team video, Burns' lazy play ends up in back of net.
Yeah.
Because it happens so often, right? Okay. So it's okay to have that guy when he then in that same game gets two goals. He offsets the issue. But the Sharks added a guy who is a knucklehead, a wild card, and he got himself suspended in game one with selfish, reckless play. He deserved that suspension. I'm going to say that right up front. You cannot cross-check guys in the upper body after the play, period.
How about just don't cross-check people?
That would be great, but, you know,
it's Pavelski.
Pavelski's career would go another 40 years if he wasn't getting cross-checked in the back. Anyway, I totally agree. But you certainly can't do that after a guy gets suspended for it in the first round.
Yep.
Right. And you just lost 7-0, or you're in the process of losing 7-0, and you do that and you put yourself and your team in the position where your second best forward is going to miss a crucial game too.
So here's the thing, and I should keep a count because it seems like this season has been the season of me coming to Dylan's defense. Dylan is still making bad mistakes, but how frequent are they compared to last year?
No, don't get me wrong. I think Dylan is vastly improved. Right.
I'm going somewhere with this. So the thing that Dylan did in game two that I think, and he did a little bit in game one, but, and this is maybe that thing that people that the people in the know in the organization keep pointing to is in the post whistle, you know, scruffy stuff where, you know, people are being jerks. Dylan will often just sort of grab one guy's jersey and just sort of hold him at arm's length, and then he'll just shake the guy. And it's very obvious Dylan is saying, this is how strong I am. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, Dylan is very strong. Mm-hmm. And for hockey players, that is frightening. Mm-hmm. He's gone from the, you know, giving people pops to the chin, you know, giving them jabs, to just doing those little subtle mind game things of just saying, this is how much I can muscle you around. And this is how, you know, this is what I'm going to do to you if I can get you in the corner. Compare that to Kane's cross check. And actually, compared to how Kane's behaving in almost all post whistle things when things are getting a little scruffy. Like he doesn't quite know where the safe space is to be a physical jerk,
right?
But, you know, not get anyone to call you on that. And I think that's where Dylan excels. I think Dylan knows exactly how to abuse people that's in a legal way,
right? You know, or at least get you a 4-on-4, as happened in game two twice.
That was ridiculous. And And honestly, I'll take 4-on-4s. Yes. At least against Vegas, I'll take 4-on-4s.
Apparently. I mean, we'll talk about that shortly. Yeah. Finish your thought on Dylan, because I wanted to come back to Kane. So.
Yeah, so Dylan is showing how somebody who is overtly physical and actually started their play with us being a knucklehead, as you describe it, and he started to show the tactics in the thuggery, and his hockey play has improved as well. He's making less stupid decisions.
Yes.
And really that's all that he's improved, is he's making less dumb decisions.
Not totally, because he's really worked on his skating. And I think I think that plays into why he doesn't have to make dumb defensive decisions, because he's not in danger of letting a guy fly past him anymore.
Exactly.
Where most defensemen make their mistakes, right?
Yeah. Also, if you notice, his skate position has gotten a lot better too, or since the other teams were bouncing them off him. Anywho, you've got a very thuggish player who is really playing the tactical mean and thuggery in a smart way. And then you got Kane, and Kane is prime position to be another Burns, where it's like, you know, he costs one, he gets one, he costs one, he gets one. Which,
well, costs one, gets two is what you need.
Yeah. Exactly. So Kane needs to look at Burns and look at Dylan and go, okay, when it comes to post play stuff, I need to be at least as smart as Dylan. And when it comes to scoring goals and giving goals up, I need to be at least twice as good as Burns. Because he's a forward. He shouldn't be in bad positions to make those sort of catastrophic defensive plays as often as Burns.
Right.
And he's not getting the hint. So I'm really excited to see game three. One,
yep.
I think Kane is smart enough to learn, and I think he's going to learn real fast. And I think Kane, more than anything, has people in his ear saying, you are playing for your contract. And not only are you playing for your contract with the Sharks, you're playing for your contract for the league. Every single team is watching this. Every single team just saw him play an amazing first round and then implode in the first game of the second round.
Actually, that's something I want to talk about, because this is something that has been I kind of went off on Kane quite a bit on Twitter as well, because, you know, this is just how I feel. Like, the Sharks cannot afford their second best player to be thrown out of a game to potentially cost them a second game because he can't control his emotions.
Exactly.
But in saying that, you made an excellent point that has also been made to me, which is, you know, the Sharks don't even get to the second round without Evander Kane.
Yep.
They may not even have made the playoffs without Evander Kane. And that's fair. But the problem is, Kane has been at his best when things have been going good.
Yep.
That's fine. Like, that's fine. I mean, he's a net positive in those situations, and he's an amazingly talented player, fast, great shot, physical. But here's this first time the Sharks faced adversity in the playoffs, and he takes a stupid penalty that leads to a suspension. There's going to be other times during the playoffs, and you know, the pressure is just going to ratchet up if the Sharks get deeper into the playoffs. So if he continues, if he doesn't learn from this, if he doesn't come back and have the Sharks in his ears, calming him down, helping him see the bigger picture, then that's not a player I want to see on the team long term.
Yeah.
And that's all. That's my point. Right.
Well, like, how does, you know, because right now everyone's saying, oh, Kane wants what, like $8 million over 8 years or something like that. And, you know, feels like that he can push above that. You know, he doesn't come back from this, that drops to 6.
Well, maybe.
Oh, I mean, it drops to 6 on any team that really is like on the edge.
Yeah.
Because let's face it. Hey, you were great in the first round. Well, you know what? The Sharks made a career being great in the first round. Where's their cup? And, you know, so that kind of hurt. I hurt myself there.
Yeah.
But the point holds. The first round doesn't really count.
Right.
If you can, the first round is there to make sure you don't take an Anaheim to the knee and go down.
Right.
So you just need to get through it with as few bumps and bruises possible. And then you get to the real playoff hockey where everything gets a lot more serious.
Exactly.
The reffing gets worse.
Well, yeah.
And oh, trust me, it's like it's like our.
It historically has. I'm semi-optimistic actually that the reffing has been better this year in the playoffs, generally speaking, than it has ever been in the time I've been a fan of hockey. It's I'm not saying it's great or perfect, but this there has been at least less in most of the games the Sharks have played so far, less swallowed whistles. It has been more like the regular season, less like postseasons past.
Ish. Still I mean, not perfect. Go watch those two overtime periods
Sharks
and get back to me.
Seven power plays last night.
And, oh, yeah.
And earned those power plays.
Oh, yeah. Hurdle just is a magnet for abuse.
And Meyer? Meyer drew, oh, yeah, with a great move into the middle, drew the basically deciding power play. So anyway, to wrap up our thoughts on Kane, I agree with you. I'm excited to see what he comes back and how he plays going forward, because the Sharks need a guy with his talent, with his skill set, who plays like he does. But they need him to be as disciplined as Meyer, oddly enough, is playing that style of game. You know, as disciplined as Pavelski is taking runs at guys, and only the moments when he knows he's not going to get called.
Pavelski is magical. Like, right? I'm sure his blood gives eternal youth. I mean,
if it shows in this playoffs that he's not that guy, he's not what the Sharks really need, then you cut. I'd say cut bait. Go into the UFA and throw everything at Tavares.
Oh, yeah.
Literally everything. Because the Sharks have that net, even crazy guy who is occasionally a net positive already. And he doesn't bring discipline issues to the table, by whom I mean Burns. They've got that one guy who's going to make baffling decisions. And you can't have two or even three, I think, and win a cup. That's just how I feel about it.
I mean, if Kane wants to go and make $9 million a year playing in Anaheim and never going to the playoffs, that's fine. But if he wants to, like, potentially take a run at a Western Conference final or a cup, because let's face it, this team could squeak our way there, he needs to just let it go and score goals. And the thing is, like, let's imagine Kane doesn't take the game misconduct, but he does. Let's say he comes close. Let's say he does the cross check and it goes a little bit lower, so he just gets a double minor or something.
Sure,
still a dumb thing to do. Still something we talk about.
But and within realm of things that every team has guys who that and don't get suspended. Hell, DeMello cross checked a guy last night after poor Meyer got cleared out illegally by Neil.
Yeah,
and I was disappointed that they called both penalties there because Neil initiated it. But, you know, in some sense, I'm kind of glad the refs did, because they did a good job of keeping control of last night's game,
sure,
I thought.
But,
right?
So take – yeah, I thought last night's game worked really well. But, like, take that little bit of frustration gone a little bit too wild, not holding on to it quite enough, put in the game too. In game one, you got Pavelski skating like 18 minutes.
Yeah.
In game two, you got Pavelski skating 32. You got the top line. Oh, yeah, sure. But you got the top line skating 20 plus minutes.
Yeah.
So you got Kane being out there that much more tired, that much more stressed.
Right.
You know, that many more high pressure situations.
Yeah.
Because DeBoer is going to lean on you if he thinks you are the top line player.
I totally agree. I mean, and he did. Let's talk about between games one and two now, because that gets to the coaching thing that you wanted to talk about too. So obviously the Sharks get completely blown out. They lose their composure. They're bad. They're really bad in game one.
Yeah.
And obvious, you know, two good things about that. First of all, you don't get extra credit for winning 7-0.
Nope. This is
the point that was made by Sharks fans everywhere, but it sure looked like the narrative that the Sharks were even with, Vegas at least, or potentially better than them, look really bad, because the Sharks just didn't show up. It looked like this series could go a sweep Vegas's direction with how bad Sharks played.
Oh yeah.
So the question obviously was going to be going into game two: what the hell does DeBoer do? You've lost your second best forward. Your team looked like garbage. One goal you had was called back, was disallowed. And you've basically, there aren't really any positives to the forwards played okay. The defense was horrible, top to bottom, everybody. LeBanc had one, and I've started to agree with Alex on this. LeBanc played one of the worst games he's ever played as one forward to sort of look at. So what do you do? Like, this means obviously somebody's coming in from the bench. You've got Hansen on the bench. You've got Goodrow on the bench. You've got guys who are still playing hurt, and you got a day and a half to solve it, basically. That's you know, season defining, the kind of questions coming out of that. So what were your thoughts? What were your thoughts, Colin, on the challenges facing the Sharks there?
So the thing that I don't know whether to love or hate about DeBoer is he always seems to be like, okay, what's the smallest amount of change I can do to sort of make it seem like I've addressed the problem and done something? And is this something I really need to do? Like, do I really need to replace somebody, or can I just move them on a line? You know, this case, he had to actually replace somebody. So he sort of reaches down and grabs essentially the only guy who's there, which is Goodrow. And maybe it's Goodrow wins over that guy we randomly signed, like, day of playoffs, because DeBoer's actually seen him play.
Yeah.
The guy who wasn't.
Gambrell, Dylan Gambrell's not getting into a postseason game.
Wasn't he promised, like, NHL play this season?
Not a playoff game. He did. He played in the last couple games of the season, and he looked fine. Okay. But Fair came back, and so Fair is the guy that DeBoer trusts. So that is what it is.
So. Anyways, like he slots Goodrow in, and I love Goodrow's game, so I've got no problems there. I felt the forward lineup actually worked really well, and then he does nothing else. Like then he skates Martin for 10 and a half minutes.
11 minutes in a double OT game,
and meanwhile, you know, Vlasic, Braun, and Burns are all and. Vlasic, Braun, and Burns are all burning over 30 minutes. So that means you've got Dylan skating more with Burns. You've got DeMello skating more with Burns. You got Braun skating more with Burns. I think I saw Vlasic out there a few times with Burns.
Yep, you did.
I mean, it's like, okay, DeBoer, why? You have a guy out there. You've got a guy sitting there who can shoot like Burns, who is just as deadly on the point, who can pass, who can skate with the puck, who can do everything we need to do, who's just so much faster than Martin, just with the puck and without the puck, that it's not even, they're not even playing the same sport. And you don't move Martin out. So, like, I deeply want to see Martin sitting in the press box on game three. I hope DeMello's knee is okay, because I'd like to see him
play. Yeah, we should talk about that too, by the way.
But DeBoer just, like, so here's what I want to see in game three. I want to see Carlson sitting in favor of Goodrow. I want to see Martin sitting in favor of Ryan.
Yep.
I'd like to see Heed play, but I think if DeMello is if DeMello is ship shape, then keep him.
Yeah, DeMello, continued to play and he looked fine. Through the rest of that game. So it really, you know, depends on kind of post game, how much swelling there was and what the damage really was. We should to talk about DeMello and the health situation, we should probably talk about the game in general.
All right.
So my sort of summary of this game is it felt like what DeBoer did, if he did anything between the two games, was just basically, you know, do the hello McFly on every single player with his cane of play our system. This is not a speed versus speed matchup, an open ice matchup that we can win. Everything starts from the back. Get possession, break out of the zone, use your speed to enter the zone, to carry into the zone, set up the cycle, play. Dominate play, and by the way, block some fucking shots. And if the next person who lets a guy go right into the zone between two defensemen, I'm a kill. And I think that's what happened. I think Martin was not in position on one of those plays often enough that DeBoer had enough. And this is something I talked a little bit about in the Duck series. Martin was playing a very different game than we had seen him play. You and I talked about this at the game we went to. He was playing much more aggressive, particularly in the offensive zone.
Yep.
And I think he was playing more aggressive in the offense or in the neutral zone. And DeBoer, whether that is something he's coached you or he's doing because he's trying to be Joakim Ryan, whatever reason, he wasn't getting the message that he needed to stop doing that.
Yep.
And so the real question I have from there is what will be the response to that in terms of lineups. I want to come back to that. But so if that was what the team was told to do, they executed on it perfectly. They dominated this game on possession. They had the lead. And then what happened, you know, against a good team when you have the lead is score effects showed up and the Sharks didn't capitalize on a power play they probably needed to go up 4-2 and, you know, lucky bounce, tied game.
More or less.
But the Sharks were in control of this game possession wise, mainly because they were blocking a shit ton of shots. The Vegas got a few dangerous opportunities and a couple of pucks that Jones probably should have had. I don't think Jones played very well in the regulation or as well as he needed to in regulation, but the Sharks fortunately solved Fleury. And then you go into coin flip lottery, OT time. But the other story of this game, besides how the Sharks played, is I felt like because they neutralized Vegas's speed and what Vegas wanted to do pretty effectively, Vegas started to take penalties.
Yeah.
Well, Vegas started to make dumb errors the way the Ducks did. And so you saw James Neal taking a run at Meyer.
Yeah.
You saw Carrier taking a horrible knee-on-knee move on DeMelo.
He should be gone at least one game.
Well,
I wonder. I mean, that's the question, right? Will that lead to a hearing for that knee-on-knee? I don't think so. I don't think they will. I don't think they'll look at it.
So it's the Department of Helmet Safety then?
Yes, basically.
You know, knees don't count as players.
Well, we know that because Dustin Brown wasn't penalized for nearly ending Tomas Hertl's career.
True.
Unless the guy gets hurt on the ice, the league doesn't pay attention. And DeMelo came back and played. So there you go.
It's funny because hockey is a sport where if it's played within the boundaries of the rules, you're still gonna have some bad motion with the head and skull, and you know there's gonna be some brain loss because you know it's just the nature of physics. But you shouldn't have people getting the sort of injuries we get because these injuries happen from like crazy accidents, you know, throat slitting accidents.
Right.
Or flagrant vandalism, just people taking runs and trying to hurt one another. So
look, I mean, that's Carrier's game.
Yeah.
Carrier's game is to be as physical as he can be and get guys off their game. And he rides that line. And he crossed it a couple times in the King series, and he crossed it here. He wasn't called on it in the King series, and that led to Doty deciding to take a run at him, which I find hilarious because it's Doty, you know, the most bearded man baby you'll ever find. And I think Carrier should be suspended, but I don't think that there will be a hearing. I just don't think so.
No, I agree. Like, I feel it should be one game for the act, and if they can show any sort of intent, then it should be another game for intent. But I agree, they're going to do nothing. And, you know, I kind of miss Shanahan's vacant-eyed stares into the camera where he explained me some, you know, messed up logic that they felt justified whatever arbitrary decision their advertisers told them to come to.
Right.
But
by the way, it hasn't been Shanahan for years. You know,
I know, right? But that's what I'm saying.
But yeah, it goes back to that. When Shanahan was in charge of Dobbs, I thought they did a good job of explaining their decision making and delineating what they were doing and what they weren't. And I actually think George Parros' version of Dobbs has also done a pretty good job of explaining when they do choose to suspend, why. The stuff that leaves questions to me is when they don't even choose to hold a hearing.
You mean like the Chara hit?
Well, like the situation we're going to have here. By the Chara hit, you mean the Max Pacioretty into the...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was years ago. Again, I'm talking about now.
Yeah, but I'm saying is like this is a group that has a history and basically was formed just to try to address things because it was during the big concussion thing happening with the NFL that it's a joke. And the fact that like this is supposed to be the great justice within the league that, you know, rights the wrongs of dirty play, it's no. I'm sorry. It's there to try to keep McDavid's head on his shoulders and, you know, keep the East hockey market energized by thinking their guys are okay. The league needs new administration. They're a bunch of assholes.
Okay.
Anyway.
I think you're right that they don't overemphasize. I think they are emphasizing head hits appropriately. I think they are underemphasizing the rest of the body in a way that looks unfair. I don't disagree with you there. On the other hand, I'm not surprised because, you know, the head injury stuff is hidden and insidious, right? Guys come back and play after getting their bell rung when they shouldn't.
Yeah.
Nobody's coming back and playing when their knee ligaments are blown out, except Jumbo.
I'm sorry, but with how much cortisol those guys get shot up between hits. No, it's ridiculous.
It's entirely possible that DeMelo came back and played on a strained or torn ligament last night. Because you're exactly right. In the moment, they don't have a choice. They'll shoot the guy up and they'll send him back out there. They don't have a choice in the sense that you don't want to shorten your bench, particularly when your bench is a 4,000-year-old guy who's not getting the message, Paul Martin. So we'll know for sure the extent of the damage by tomorrow. Or if there's practice today, we'll know today. I don't think there is. But that's neither here nor there. The point is that this is not the sort of penalty that the league looks at unless there is an obvious injury on the ice.
And you know what we're going to get out of this, though. We're going to get DeMelo sitting and Ryan coming in for DeMelo and Martin still skating 5 minutes in a game.
Here's why Ryan is going to play tomorrow. The Sharks won this game. Period. That's DeBoer.
Oh yeah.
He's not going to take Martin out when the Sharks won. He's not. Even though the decision making he had to employ because Martin is garbage should have led to the Sharks losing the game.
Oh yeah.
And if it doesn't lead to them losing this game, it will pile up the wear and tear on those guys and they will lose future games. That's the frustrating part about DeBoer.
If DeBoer just had a simple self rule where he just looked at the end of each game and said, okay, anybody I skated under 12 minutes, I need to replace with somebody for next game. Because every time he does that, he just starts to shelter and just close them off more until we're, you know, seeing Dylan at 6 minutes or, you know, Brown at 5 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know what Ryan did to lose his spot back to Martin because Ryan was truly excellent this year. Start to finish, did everything that was asked of him, was a Burns whisperer, and got hurt. And so the Sharks decided to give Martin a shot to get some last NHL action before he retires. That was my feeling. And then all of a sudden, Ryan came back healthy, and just DeBoer was like, I kind of trust the older guys more. So
I think Martin was just like, hey, Pete, remember when MTV came along and radio killed the video star?
Remember when I played for you in junior, Pete? Pete's like, no, I don't remember that, but I'll trust you. All right, let's go.
You've seen the other side of 35 as well. Let's talk.
So this game, let's actually spend some time talking about the game, was I thought the Sharks played probably their best game of the playoffs because they were playing a better opponent than the Ducks were. I think that the Sharks should have won this game 3-1 in regulation because Jones wasn't great. I thought that this game was over in OT as you did because the Sharks did not play a great first OT period.
No.
They especially the last 8 minutes of that period, they looked gassed. They looked like it was over. They looked like they were going to come out for the second OT and basically it was going to be five corpses, five orange cones gliding around the ice.
They looked like a bunch of guys whose coaches have been skating the same like nine guys the whole game.
Exactly. And then you went to bed and missed the best part of the game.
And then I missed us winning, which to be fair, I agree. We should have won this in regulation. Jones gave up, and it was honestly, I think it was Schmidt's goal. It's just like, why did you not have that?
Yeah,
that was yours.
And you know that puck changed direction. I will admit that and grant that off of Carlson, but Jones wasn't in position from where that shot was coming from, Jones needed to be not in the center of his net. He needed to be a little bit left. And then that puck doesn't squeak through his arm. That hits him in the chest.
Yep.
So I think what I will say is Jones was awesome in OT, period. There was a shot by James Neal that went off the butt end of of Jones's stick that should have been the end of the game.
Yep.
And that was, I mean, that redeems everything that Jones did in the regulation in some sense.
Sure. But here's the thing. It's because that's a bounce. I mean, that's hockey god bounce.
Yep.
We didn't win because of bounces. In fact, we didn't really get that many in this game where we had so many opportunities where I knew the collective will of the Sharks fan base was just trying to pull that puck an inch left or an inch right. If we had gotten bounces this game, it would have been, 5-2 at the end.
Yep.
Or probably 5-4 because we would have eased back and they would have rallied. But so the thing I loved about this game, and this is the sort of playoff game that I want us to win. I would prefer to have every playoff game be one like this, except with a lot more even distribution of skating time.
And bounces.
Because it's a character win. It's a, they played a really good first period and then one got away from them.
Yep.
I mean, it was a slap pass off the backboards to a weak side.
Yep.
It was a great play by Vegas. It was a really smart play by the players on the ice. That's one of those, oh, crap. Come back in the second. Try to just slow the game back down, get control, squeeze out a goal or two and take it back. Oh, shit, they did it again. And then we came back. We basically just grabbed a hold of the game, controlled the pace, just set up pressure. I think there was a long stretch where the puck never stayed. Vegas never had possession of the puck in our defensive zone. And we just started squeezing goals together. And the goals that we put together, I mean, you could say, oh, well, Burns got a bounce with his first goal, except then you're basically putting an asterisk on his entire career. And then the Logan goal and the Brent Burns second goal, I mean, those aren't bounces. Those are just great plays. Great plays with lethal shooting.
Yep.
So it's the manufactured win, for the two people in a crusty bagel who listen to us. When I'm talking about a manufactured win, it's this game. Because you have to come back. You have to play right. You need to play disciplined and, put the chances up and just grind a win out. And you grind it out despite the bounces not going your way. And we did that. So, we managed to score on the power play, which is always nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the interesting part of the win. So Sharks did not score a 5-on-5 goal. Thanks to discipline issues, let's say on both sides, the Sharks managed to score 2 4-on-4 goals. That's one more than they scored in the entire 82 game regular season at 4-on-4. And they scored 2 power play goals. And obviously that was key. They were the faster team, the stronger team, and faster when it mattered, I should say. I feel like you said that they sort of smothered Vegas most of the game. They blocked a lot of shots, kept dangerous shots out of the zone mostly. There are some drawbacks, as you say, to this game, which is the minutes that were piled up on crucial guys. Not great, particularly as the playoffs get deeper, that's going to be a challenge. So, a guy who's not superstitious would absolutely bring Ryan in for Martin for game 3. I just don't think that's going to happen. The Sharks got lucky to some extent that that the home office ruled that interference play the way they ruled it. I think it was ruled correctly. Most of the national media agrees that it was ruled correctly, that it doesn't matter whether Jones's stick itself is not in the crease. If you're going to let guys ride by and just interfere with a goalie's stick just because it's not in the crease, that's just stupid.
So I'll say on the decision, it is hard to see. Like, I was watching those replays. I'm like, I kind of feel like we're getting away with one here.
I don't think so. I mean, it's clear that he interfered with the stick because the stick was pulled out of his damn hand. And he pulled down by in holding on to it.
So, ultimately, I think I'm making a point Alice loves bringing up, which is, what the hell is goalie interference? Because,
I mean, that's why, that question is why I didn't think that it would be disallowed. But I was happy to be wrong.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy to win. A win is a win. I will take the filthiest, nastiest, most questionable win possible. It still counts.
But just by the rule, you're not allowed to interfere with the goalie when they're in the crease.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Martin Jones was in the crease. It's not on purpose that Marchessault, you know, ends up hitting Jones's stick and pulling Jones away from the goal, but intent doesn't fucking matter.
Sure.
What matters is he came that so close to Jones, he inadvertently hooked Jones's stick and pulled Jones away from the play. Textbook goalie interference. Textbook.
Yeah, I'm okay. So
I'm not explaining this necessarily to counter you.
I'm vehemently countering
some of the narrative.
Sure. My point more is, I don't feel this is a rule you get to say textbook on, because I've seen that exact situation go the other way, because it seems like it's one of the most interpretive rules in the NHL.
Yeah.
Like, it's right up there with roughing. It's like, what the hell is roughing in hockey?
Right. Well, roughing is just a way to avoid 5-minute majors for fighting.
Basically. Sure. Well, but you've seen it get dragged out. Yes,
it gets used for other things too. I totally agree.
So that's why I turned the game off, because I was just like, ain't no way this is going our way. So good night. You know, let's take two in San Jose and get back on the road here. Yeah. I was delighted to be wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I can empathize with those who those who are bitter, because it's hard to see by the letter of the law. Absolutely, it's interference. But this is a league that, you know, it's spirit of the law, letter of the law. Hey, look, there's an I in this one, so I can just make up whatever I want. I don't know. The rule book, the rules and the league seem to be passing acquaintances. So I'm happy to get a win from it. I'll take three more like it.
Yeah.
You know? Three more wins on, you know, official decision.
And in that vein, so the Sharks came out in the second OT and played with a lot more speed and energy than they had in the first OT, and drew two penalties in the first few minutes, both by playing hard and skating with the puck, etc. And on the last one, just one of the best look guys off then pass to Kocur passes that you'll ever see a guy not named Jumbo make. LeBanc, that is to say, had a much better game two than he had a game one. Was excellent on the power play. That pass was amazing. I mean, even Kocur said it surprised him a little bit that it got on his stick. And Kocur just rifled that one in, and the Sharks come home 1-1. Now, the upside to that now is we have a 5-game series, and the Sharks have home ice over those 5 games.
And
have home ice advantage.
And for people who are new to hockey or never been to the Shark Tank, we are one of the few teams that is actually considered to have a real home ice advantage, because playing in the tank is nightmare sauce for so many people.
Yeah. I mean, funny because, you know, the year of the Stanley Cup final run, if you remember, the Sharks were pretty bad at home until the playoffs. but
that's the thing. It's like, because normal regular season games, you know, attendance up and down, they like to say sold out every night, but not really.
They haven't been sold out since the year the Sharks got reverse swept by the Kings, basically.
Yeah. So you have an arena which is kind of old in its construction style. It's very sort of compact. And then you get a bunch of rabid Californians who, let's face it, the California culture is hobby. And Californians are mad about their hobbies, like literally, you know, in the streets screaming about them.
And it's so I do that about X-Wing miniatures.
Yeah, or everything, you know. When you've got so much great weather, you just can't help but go outside and scream about things you like. So you put all these raving lunatics into a compact space and give them LED wristbands and things to shake around and booze. And for players, that, I mean, yeah, every time you touch the ice, you got 18,000 people reminding you how much you suck and, you know, not even your mother loves you. And you got some asshole up in the nosebleed section making weird magical manure jokes. So I welcome the Vegas Knights to San Jose because they've apparently been having crazy standing room only sellouts. But this is their first season, and let's face it, it's a tourist city. So I'm imagining a bunch of the seats are just people in the city for a night.
They've had a hell of a narrative this year. I mean, like as much as, you know, five games in a period, it looked like they were never going to lose a game on the path to a Stanley Cup win. And I think my favorite thing about last night about the Sharks sealing that double OT win is first, they broke the narrative. Vegas is beatable. Second, they've now done what I think that they needed to do to win this series, which is, and I mentioned, talked about this last week when Alex and I talked about this, is they needed to put some adversity on a team that has faced none this year.
Yeah, sure.
And losing an OT and also having some of those guys on that team like, oh, we lost, but the league robbed us. The league robbed us on that call. It was totally a goal. Like, that's perfect for the Sharks.
Oh, yeah.
Getting into their head and thinking, huh, you know, maybe we aren't the Cinderella story. Maybe we're the baddies. What if we're the baddies? Is exactly what the Sharks needed for to get a mental edge here. Now, also coming home, the Sharks are going to be able to hard match Braun and Vlasic against whatever line they want to.
Yep,
that's going to be huge. And second, they can make some decisions to ice a stronger team. Right, Kane's going to be back. That's going to push a marginal fourth liner out. Yep. That probably should be Carlson.
Yep.
But there you go.
Goodrow had at least two opportunities where it was just like, man, if you just jigged or jagged a little, that's in.
I mean, Goodrow's a guy playing in his first playoff game ever.
He's a guy who's saying, look, I can play, keep me.
And he'd missed a lot of time. If he'd buried that goal, I think he would have had a better job of staying on the ice. And I suspect that DeBoer trusts Carlson more than he trusts Goodrow, particularly on the PK. So I suspect Goodrow will go off. But Carlson probably should be the guy to go off.
I agree.
Sorensen was the other guy who got benched in this game, besides Donskoy. And I'm not sure why either of those guys ended up.
Because
I thought Sorensen had a great first period on the third line. And then DeBoer disagreed.
I think Sorensen. So remember something that we talked about. I think it was at the game where I mentioned that Sorensen is going to run into a series where his size begins to matter in a big way. This is that series because he is playing out of his mind, energetic position, really smart, you know, finesse hockey in the space that's being allowed him. Every time he's tried to get into the rough stuff, he has gotten wrecked. He cannot try to skate into this Vegas team. And every time he's trying to, it's just not working out. And it's looking a little forced, and maybe he's being coached into trying to play this way. And it's not his game, and he's not doing well with it. So that would be, I think, I don't know. If you keep Carlson, I would sit Sorensen and put Goodrow in because, you know, Goodrow's getting knocked around, but he can at least hold up along the boards. I mean, Sorensen is getting literally just lifted off the puck at times, and, you know, he can do nothing about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't see that so much, but I will trust your eyes on it. I suspect you're right that the guy who's going to get sat based on, you know, sort of the playing decisions that were made through game two, I believe it'll be Sorensen probably who ends up on the bench.
Which I think is the wrong choice. I think Carlson should sit, even though I just said Sorensen can't really fight.
Yeah.
Because he needs to be Pavelski before Pavelski like drank the super soldier serum and became amazing. Because we always seem to forget that the skill that made Pavelski so lethal and still makes him so lethal is he gets lost, reemerges in some space and puts a shot on goal.
Yep.
And the thing that's magical now is he's doing that while having a 24/7 shadow, Whereas before, he just was that guy. He's, you know, number eight. Who cares? He's tiny. And he would just slip in and out of plays and just be impactful. And that's what Sorensen does so well. Like, one, he's positionally just really smart. He's got great hands and he's got great speed. Let that guy get lost. Tell him, hey, defend yourself. Throw a hit if you can, you know, but play smart stick defense, you know, get in the passing lanes and, you know, do you on offense.
Yeah.
You know, let him play it like he played the first series and let the other guys worry about taking flying hits.
Yeah.
Oh, and side note to the Vegas fans, you guys should go back and look at all the hits that Meyer and Hurdle tried to throw. And remind yourself that these guys are young and don't really know how to throw hits that effectively. When they learn to hit, be afraid, because Hurdle hurts himself throwing a bad hit and bashing his nose on some guy's helmet. Meyer is like trying to lead hits with his wrists. I mean, these guys are young. They don't have the experience of lining up hits at NHL speed. You know, they don't have the knack for it just yet, and they're learning. And, you know, we're going to be watching replays of Hurdle taking that hit behind the Sharks net where he got lifted up. We're going to be watching it for the rest of the playoffs. You know, that's on the highlight reel. Yeah, it's going to be there.
It's all right with me. I largely think that we won this game on the strength of Hurdle and Couture basically taking the team on their backs. So,
sure.
But if we also have to watch poor Hurdle get clubbed over and over again, that's just the cost of doing business.
Sure, but to me, it's like a couple seasons ago when I was raving about how Donskoy just seemed to learn a new skill every game. I think these are the playoffs where Hurdle sort of emerges from his chrysalis as the magical checking butterfly of doom. Meyer just learns how to lead with his shoulder when, you know, throwing a full speed check. And yeah. I really hope that happens in this series, because once these guys really just find their groove on playing the smart playoff physical game, it's just going to be wonderful to watch.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we've always thought, I think, of this playoff run being sort of more seasoning for this team towards a future Stanley Cup. So we'll see. Ultimately when the Sharks ride ends, we'll see, what LeBanc and Tierney and Hurdle and Meyer have gained. So among other guys. So we come home, we get two home games. If the Sharks play well and everything works to their advantage, they could go back to Vegas up 3-1, or it could turn out that the game two Sharks were a bit of a fluke. And Vegas kind of their speed and discipline reemerges, and we kind of have, I don't have any idea where the series goes from here. They are, maybe when we talked about the Knights last week, we gave a sense that these are two teams that are very alike the way they play the game, in the sense that we talked about speed versus speed, both or speed being an advantage for both teams. I think game two showed the way that is false. Yes, the Sharks have speed, but to be successful, they need to play their structured game and sort of suppress the Golden Knights' speed advantage, because they do have a speed advantage. We saw that in game one.
Oh, yeah. So the Knights try to penetrate offensively by using size and speed, by basically putting a winger like on a line through the gaps in your defense and just saying, feed him the puck when he's at full stride. Whereas we like to counterpunch defensively. The thing that stuck out to me in game two is, and please watch for this in game three, every time the Sharks could try to get into a pass lane and create a puck scramble, they did. Yep. And we almost always came out of puck scrambles with possession. Yep. Because I swear DeBoer just runs the team on wall drills nonstop.
Yep.
Because
I disagree.
Like, we always seem to have the smarter sticks when it comes to getting into those stick scrambles where it's like five sticks just jamming in and snapping it out. And we always seem to snap out to a breaking player.
Yeah. I think the way to say that is the Sharks were much more defensively responsible, speed first,
lane control.
Yeah. Yes. Lane control, except for still there were a couple times in the first period where, again, some asshole let a Vegas guy go through the middle of the zone and go one-on-one on Jones. But fortunately, Jones was up to those this time.
So I'll give you homework for game three. Yep. Watch, because I'm not just talking about how we're counting rush and how we're counting other teams' possession. I'm counting any single time it's like one of our players gets knocked off the puck.
Right.
You'll see the Sharks player not try to sort of muscle and try to get a hold of it. They'll just swipe at it. They'll swipe to create a scramble. Like, we are trying to create scrambles is my theory.
To slow down Vegas, basically. Yes. Absolutely. And like everything was built around everything that the Sharks did structured correctly in game two was around holding up the puck carrier.
Yeah. And it seems to be.
Or deflecting the puck away from him.
Yeah, exactly. It looks by design because every single time I saw one of these scrambles happen in game two and I saw someone just swipe at the puck, my first thought was, oh crap, that's an open side. Don't do that. And then the camera shifts and it's like, oh, there's the breaking Sharks player ready for it.
Yeah.
So if this is the actual system DeBoer's going for and they're executing on, wow, good job.
Yeah.
Or we just have a bunch of really, smart-handed players with good hands.
Well, and again, that's puck bounces too, right? The other thing could be that I did see the Sharks trying to use their sticks in game one to slow down the puck carrier and disrupt the carrier and get the puck away, and they weren't successful in game one. So it could be, game two is the game where all of those deflections went the Sharks' direction. There's kind of the silent killer in some sense. Maybe. And we'll see if it keeps up. Again, I want to say this, the Golden Knights are, again, incredibly well coached.
Yes.
And very smart top to bottom as players. Except for maybe James Neal. So there could be a counter punch to what DeBoer did in game two, what the team was able to do in game two that the Sharks can't deal with. And that's what I think will be interesting to see in game three. The last thing I kind of want to say about this, because we are running a little long, is the good thing is if this does work to shut down Vegas, this is also a prototype for how to beat the Pens.
Yep.
If the Sharks get back to, and again, this is obviously a long shot, but if they were to get back to the SCF and face the Pens again, this matchup against the Golden Knights is giving them a blueprint for success.
Well, look even more short term than that. It's a blueprint for beating the grown up Knights, which is Nashville.
Yeah, but that's assuming, of course, that Nashville gets past the Jets because the Jets clubbed them in Game One.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to play. Both of those teams are
terrifying.
Yeah, they are both terrifying.
More so than I was terrified by Vegas.
Yes, absolutely.
Which means I may be an idiot, given what Vegas did to the Sharks in Game One.
Yeah, but we spent a long time discussing how blowouts just sort of happened.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so last question I want to ask you. So Jumbo is rounding into form, and he practiced for the first time without a no-contact jersey.
No.
Do you think Jumbo comes back in the lineup? Hold on, not should he. Do you think he comes back into the lineup in game three or four?
Four if we lose three.
Okay. I'm not sure either way.
I think if Thornton shows up in this playoffs, the soonest I'd want to see him is game one of the third round.
Yeah, probably. And if that goes badly, agree.
I wouldn't want to see him until September if he re-signs at a discount.
Here's why I'm not so worried about him drawing back into the lineup vis-a-vis speed of the Sharks. Again, what was successful in game two against Vegas wasn't matching speed for speed. It was slowing the game down through the neutral zone and through the defensive zone. And even playing a possession game in the zone, the Sharks game. And so I'm less worried now that Jumbo coming back into the lineup is going to jeopardize the way the Sharks have success than I was before. That said, I'm with you. I want him to come back only when he's 1,000% healthy. So if that's, I'd rather it be later in the series than earlier.
I think Tuck is 6'4 and too young to know that he shouldn't hit Thornton.
That's fine. Jumbo will punch his face. So
sure, it's just hard to throw a punch when you have no knees.
Sure. So what do you think? What happens in the two home games?
That's gonna be hard. I honestly feel like as long as the Sharks show up and show up like sort of angry and show up ready to play, we win. And I think, I think it's going to be like 4-2. I think Kane is the kind of player, and I think Kane is the type of person who wants to get paid, that he's going to come out and he's going to try to do the best he can. And to date, Pavelski has been that player that just sort of gets players behind him. You know, hop on my back, let's go.
Right.
And for Kane and Donskoy, that's amazing, because it's basically just like, yeah, follow the short guy and try to score a goal. And that's a much less pressured situation than it's like, hey, Kane, carry our entire franchise for us. there were times in game two where I was like, if that was Kane with the puck, this would be a breakout.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. Like, I'm hesitant because you can't just walk by a 7-0 blowout and go
exactly. Exactly.
And you can't walk out of a game two victory that you damn near lost, and yep. you damn near lost coming out of the first period.
Yep.
Without yet, also giving due consideration.
Yep. And yet, you know, this team showed the resilience that all year DeBoer's kind of been talking about, and we've seen that the Sharks, yeah. even when they're down 2-0, even when it looks like the opposing goalie is unsolvable, they find a way.
And we're a Sharks team that is playing the whistle and saying, I don't care, I'm not in the crease, I'm going to keep going until they blow the whistle.
Yeah.
Like, we are digging for dirty, filthy goals,
sure.
and you have to do it. So
yeah.
I think we win game two or game three. I think we lose one more somewhere along the way.
Well, I mean, so to make my six-game prediction, I think the Sharks need to win both home games. I think they need to go back to Vegas up 3-1 and let it ride.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that's what's going to happen, but I think they need to. And I think Kane coming back, and in theory, if DeBoer isn't a complete moron, Ryan drawing in for Martin.
Yep.
So both of those things happen going into game three. I think the Sharks win both games. If he continues to roll out the oldest defenseman in the league, then I think the Sharks will struggle to win one.
Yeah.
Personally.
I agree. I think it's still possible.
I mean, they won without Kane, so there you go.
Oh yeah. And I think that would be DeBoer's sort of argument is, well, hey, we did fine. It's like, did you though?
Right. Yeah, it was one, you know, not overturned goal away from the Sharks coming home 0-2.
And the big narrative during the game, at least on the broadcast I watched, was how, oh my God, turnovers seemed to be the big thing. Turnovers, turnovers, yeah. turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, Vlasic and Burns both gave goals away.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest here.
Well, the funny thing is, the Knights turned the puck over way more than we did.
Yes.
But
bear in mind, I think, again, because of the way the Sharks approached slowing them down, shutting them down.
Sure. So
yeah,
you add Kane in, and maybe this is a vote for keeping Sorensen, by the way, because he's a magnificent puck thief. You add another high-speed player who can snatch the puck off people's sticks. I mean, our entire top line are just dirty, rotten puck thieves. So you let them play, we do fine. I think we take game three. I think if Vegas hasn't figured us out in game three, they're going to come with something in game four that, you know, gut checks us.
Yep.
So actually here's the catch-all. Whoever wins game three needs to close out game four if they're going to take the series quickly, because the losing team of game three is going to come out just with murder in game four. So
yeah.
We need to win game three, and then we need to come in and win game four in the first period.
Yeah. So I think the Sharks will win game three because I think Vegas feels like they were robbed by the refs and are starting to maybe, again, they're facing adversity for the first time They've got a great coaching staff, and so that's an upside to them, you know, being able to overcome that adversity. But on the same token, the players themselves are sort of untested. Yep. And so I think the Sharks will win game three. I think they need to win game four to win the series, to win both at home here, but we'll see. All right. So with that said, I'm not going to do three stars of the week because, again, whenever we can get away from that, I'm happy to get away from it. So do you have any last thoughts before we say goodbye?
In my most fevered of dreams, I think DeBoer listens, and every once in a while, you know, some little piece of wisdom cracks through, you know, to skate Ryan.
Yeah, to survive, not necessarily just this series, but to survive the series to come. You cannot have a defenseman playing only 11 minutes and then go double OT. And we will go to OT again, probably in this series. It will happen. I agree. If I was in charge of the lineup, Paul Martin would be in the, he'd be on waivers, be nice. Even though you don't even be need nice. To waive them right now. He just shouldn't even be an option for DeBoer to put on the ice. He's been fine since he's been back, but Ryan is better and he makes the team better. So that is this week's podcast. We'll be back either next Friday or next Sunday to record another one. We'll figure that out as the series goes on. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. You can find me tweeting on Twitter at Circling the Cup. Occasionally, Alex's posts from Facebook invade that feed, which can be very confusing, but it is what it is. You can also find this podcast on iTunes and somewhere on Android, who knows where. And you can come listen to us live, do our recordings each week if you want to on YouTube. If you follow my Google YouTube account, BenCTC, you'll always be notified when we go live. So go ahead and click, go over to YouTube and find BenCTC and find our videos. I always leave the last week's video up public until we record the next one. You can also find us at circlingthecup.com. Sorry, Colin, you said something?
I was just saying you're a nice guy.
Yeah, I am such a nice guy. It's actually really funny to see how many people just blunder into our videos midweek and watch them. And that is it for this week. So thanks to our listeners, and thanks for the questions to Steve Vignola, Stevie Viggs, I think 17 on Twitter. We'll be back and hopefully have two more Sharks wins to talk about and maybe a third round matchup to talk about by the next time we come back.
And no Sharks injuries.
Yes. Let's hope that the Sharks can stay healthy. I mean, maybe that's why Donskoy played so little. Maybe he got hurt. We don't know. Keep an eye on us on Twitter. We'll obviously retweet everything there that we learn about what's going to happen for game three. This is Ben on behalf of Alex, who usually hosts, signing off, and say goodbye, Colin.
No.
Perfect. And go Sharks.
Go Sharks.